the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Carl Thomas and Mary McCone with us in a moment, but I want to start with Dr. Edward Burke, lecturer in the history of war at UCD, who was writing today in the Irish Examiner about what he described as Donald Trump's war against Iran being a spectacular gamble. But Edward, is it actually a war that Donald Trump is waging against Iran? If he has one missile and bomb strike against the country and doesn't put any soldiers in beyond that, is that actually a war rather than just an attack?
I think we've seen this before in the case of Libya, where you had, you know, predominantly an air campaign. It can still have devastating regional and geopolitical effects. So what he started now is difficult to stop. It will probably embolden hardliners in Tehran who want to really accelerate Iran's push for a nuclear weapon with whatever highly enriched uranium centrifuges that they have left. So I think we'll see, you know, there'll be a lot of blowback. There'll be waves of geopolitical consequences for this in response to the US military assault on Iran for many months, if not years to come.
You also said it leaves America's erstwhile allies in Europe exposed and vulnerable. What do you mean by that? Is that because of the fact that as Europe, not us in Ireland, obviously, but as the rest of Europe is an ally of America as part of NATO, does that mean that if Iran was to strike back against the United States, that as part of our NATO membership or Europe's NATO membership, that the other European countries would be forced to take America's side?
Yeah, it certainly leaves them in a very precarious position. We've already seen a situation where Iranian intelligence has been really ramping up their operations across Europe. I mean, the Director General of Britain's MI5 recently warned that his service were struggling to keep pace with assassination plots, with sabotage plots. In many ways, Iran were trying to emulate what Russia were doing in trying to attack Western interests through sabotage, but also, you know, cyber attacks as well. And we'll see a scaling up of that now in the coming months. I don't think, you know, the Iranian regime is just going to, you know, sort of give up now, and they're going to try and make America pay in ways that are a little bit difficult to sometimes. Certainly what we see from Russia as well is these kind of semi-deniable attacks on things like DHL or on, you know, defense companies in Germany or people who work for them. So I think we'll see similar, and similarly with non-attributable cyber attacks that can be traced back to Russia. But, you know, it takes a while to think, is the regime doing this, or is the regime allowing others to do this, or what's the relationship with criminal or terrorist organizations, militia from other countries, not least Iraq or Hezbollah. So we're going to see a lot of that, I think, in the coming months. But of course, Europe is also in a difficult position because, you know, for example, President Macron has come out and said that he thinks that the American strikes were illegal. So that the US now, you know, just is simply not giving any concern for international law in Paris's view. I think other countries also in Europe, NATO countries, take that view as well. And that puts us in a really precarious position. I mean, the 2003 invasion of Iraq was preceded with months of wrangling over legal interpretations. Donald Trump just doesn't care about any of that. He has no concern for international law. And that is very concerning for Europe that does say it is, of course, on the right side of international law and wants to adhere to it.
So, of course, he's heading to the Netherlands, where there is a NATO meeting about budgets and expenditure by member countries on common defence. What do you expect will arise out of that?
Well, I think it's ironic, you know, I mean, the last 10 years, the US has actually gone backwards on its percentage of GDP on defence. It's nowhere near 5% itself. But it is, of course, and some European countries, not least Poland, are much further ahead, over 4% of GDP. So the United States has to show how it will also vastly increase its defence spending. Some countries, not least Spain, who's always been a laggard on this, is deeply cynical about these calls from the United States for it to reach 5% of GDP spending, and thinks that's simply just too ambitious given its other budgetary concerns. So I think we're going to have a lot of countries saying they will do this, but you know, it will take far longer than the rest of Donald Trump's term for countries, for most countries, to come anywhere near this 5% target. And of course, 1.5% is merely going to be enabling infrastructure such as the emergency planning, you know, things like building up transport infrastructure so that it can be used in a time of war, things like that. So I think it'll be it's you know, there'll be lots of fanfare, lots of saying that this is a massive victory, but the actual translation into this as a real success for Donald Trump, including the United States, will take an awful long time. I mean, what we see is a very fractured NATO. Because we see that countries such as Turkey, for example, who really condemned the US strikes in Iran, also a NATO member state. We see Spain deeply cynical about US actions in the Middle East and not getting on board with this 5%. We see France also saying that the United States is engaged in illegality. This is not a time of unity. It may be people like Mark Rutte, who sort of praised Donald Trump's strikes in Iran. I don't know who he's speaking for. He certainly shouldn't have been speaking for NATO, considering the divisions in NATO. So we see what might be favourable to London or The Hague is not necessarily going down at all well in the Mediterranean or Ankara, Madrid, etc. So there'll be a lot of talk, but you know there'll be, and European countries already understand generally that they need to spend more on defence. But hitting that 5% target in the near term, certainly the next 5 years, is going to be a hugely ambitious task. And I suspect many who say that they will do this will not be able to do so for up to 10 years.
Okay, one final word to you before I go to Mary McKeown and Cal Thomas. And just going back to the situation in relation to Israel and Iran. Trump this morning was boasting that the 12-day war was over. In your estimation, though, is the war over? Has it been brought to a conclusion by the ceasefire that he has brokered and which still seems to be holding despite an early wobble?
I mean, I think it is good to have a ceasefire. I think we should all be, you know, if Donald Trump can get Israel and Iran there to stop trading missiles, I think that in the short term is a very good thing. However, the Iranian nuclear program is not finished, and they retain a capacity to enrich uranium. I think most experts would say that, you know, these military strikes have not ended Iran's nuclear program.
Obliterated it. Obliterate would mean ending, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think he came with, you know, it was the fastest, you know, battle damage assessment ever done in history by a US president coming out an hour or two after strikes and saying that it was a complete success. I think most analysts, most international analysts, including, you know, former Iran experts in Mossad, for example, have also said that this has not destroyed Iran's nuclear program entirely. It's damaged it, but they have been engaging in a dispersal strategy, trying to disperse their enriched uranium. They have 408 kilograms of it, and they have dispersed it to various sites across Iran, some of which are likely to be unknown even to very sophisticated Israeli intelligence officers and others. So it is quite likely that, and also they have dispersed knowledge of their nuclear program. They suffered, certainly 11 scientists have been killed since this campaign by Israel began. But in recent years, Iran has taken precautions to try and, you know, incentivize, spread out knowledge of nuclear expertise, including weaponization expertise, you know, to many other scientists. So I think we'll see that they retain a capacity to get their nuclear program back on track. And indeed, there'll be many hardliners, particularly in the Revolutionary Guards, who will now be saying that the only deterrence you have is not to sign up to something like the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which Donald Trump unilaterally ripped up in 2018 and was working to row back on uranium enrichment. It was a successful agreement that, you know, you can't trust the United States. You certainly can't trust the Europeans either, who seem to be less and less potent in the world. And therefore, the greatest deterrent that you have is to go for broke, to rush for a nuclear weapon. I think that leaves us in a very, very dangerous place in the world. Meanwhile, they will continue to carry out these covert operations. They will continue to look for ways to harm Israel, harm the United States, including through cyber attacks, but also I would suspect through the sponsorship of terrorism attacks as well, including potentially in Europe.
Thank you very much, Dr. Edward Burke from UCD. Mary McKeown, could it be that we're not giving Donald Trump enough credit for strategy and genius and the art of the deal being brought to military affairs, in that he has scared the Iranians witless with his bunker-busting bombs that have obliterated their nuclear capacity, and then, rather than waging a full-scale war, having brought it to his knees, he has brokered a ceasefire between Iran and Israel. Is that not some form of genius?
Well, you know, that is an absolute best case scenario. And I think in the short term, it can be argued if this ceasefire holds, and there are always wobbles. I think every defence person will tell you at the beginning of any ceasefire, you know, somebody doesn't get the memo on time or whatever. It seems for now, and given Trump's very strong language and very strong message to Israel before he got aboard the helicopter and then to go on to The Hague, it seems that he has leverage over Netanyahu now. You know, and Netanyahu has led this and has manipulated Trump. And I think if you want to talk about strategic sort of smarts and the wiliness and ruthlessness, you want to talk about Netanyahu really more than Trump in this context. But I think for the time being, the ceasefire may hold because Trump can now say to Netanyahu, if you want us to keep supplying you with arms, which they definitely need, and support you, you better stop now. You better stop. This is enough. You better not bomb Iran again. So I think that he may get this sort of fragile ceasefire that may hold. He may even get Iran back to the table. He may get further concessions from Iran on their nuclear enrichment. He probably will, because if he doesn't, he's going to say, right, Israel, go at it again and we'll join you. But I think that longer term is where the rubber will really hit the road. And I absolutely agree with what was just said, that Iran, it's very, very unlikely that he did get the enriched materials. It's very, very unlikely that Iran hasn't, in anticipation of this, been squirreling stuff away elsewhere. So I think at the moment he's flying off to The Hague. He's on a bit of a high. He had an extraordinary message from Mark Rutte, which of course he put up on Truth Social. Dear Donald, congratulating him for his decisive action. Extraordinary. Something no one else dared to do. I mean, it sounded like Mike Johnson wrote it. So I think that we will see what unfolds next. If this ceasefire holds, it's something we should be grateful for. If Iran's nuclear capabilities are derailed or delayed, I think that's something the world should be grateful for as well.
Okay, Cal Thomas, welcome back. I know you've been away for the last few weeks. I was away last week as well. But what is your assessment of what has been going on in relation to Trump supporting Israel and its attacks on Iran?
Well, Matt, thank you for the welcome back. I missed you and glad to be back on. It's always a privilege. I think we need to realize what we're dealing with here. As my friend and former diplomat from Israel, Yoram Ettinger, has written in his newsletter, and I quote today in my column, since the Muslim Barbary pirates of the 19th century, irrespective of U.S. policy, Sunni and Shiite Islamic terrorism has been determined not to disengage from, but to intimidate, terrorize, and subjugate the infidel West, and especially the great American Satan, while establishing Islam as the only legitimate, divinely ordained religion on earth. I think what the president has did Saturday night and ordered sets back Iran's nuclear program. Now, we're going to have to see the bomb damage assessment. That's not out yet. We have only Trump's word, but I'm waiting for the Pentagon with more experienced military leaders to give us an accurate bomb damage assessment.
Sorry, Cal, do you think will they be allowed to give it, or will they be told by Trump what to say?
No, I think they'll be allowed to give it. But look, Matt, I think Marion is right in this respect, that the materials, the fissible materials, were probably moved before the bombing began. We have satellite imagery of a number of trucks showing up at one of the sites that were bombed. Speculation, which I think is probably accurate, is that a lot of that material, that nuclear material, was moved someplace else. So we'll have to see. These people, these mullahs, these apocalyptic terrorist people who have killed and maimed a lot of Americans, either directly or through their proxies like Hezbollah and the Houthis and Hamas, are not going to be defeated. They believe that they have a message from their God to come after everybody, including other Muslims who don't agree with them. That kind of thing cannot be extinguished, but it can be deterred.
Well, do you believe then that Trump should have gone further than he did with his bombing raid? Do you believe, as some neocons would, that regime change is required, that America should be involved in making sure that the clerics no longer have control in Iran?
Well, you'll recall in the last phony election when people demonstrated in the streets against the regime. Many were locked up or killed. I mean, these are tough people, these mullahs. It's going to, in the end, depend on the Iranian people. If they want change, they've got to make it themselves. The United States, as we have shown over and over again to our detriment in Vietnam and other places cannot impose our will and democracy on other people who don't want it. But I think since Iran has been this obvious threat for at least 40 years, since Iranian so-called students seized Americans in the American embassy in Tehran and held them for 444 days before releasing them on the day Ronald Reagan was elected, I think we have a continuing problem here that's not going to end by what happened Saturday night.
Okay, but of course, Marion, there are other issues here. If the Benjamin Netanyahu has been saying since the mid-1990s that Iran has been posing an imminent nuclear threat to Israel, but is that actually true? I mean, it's the same way we were told back in 2003 that Iraq had to be invaded because it had weapons of mass destruction. None existed. Indeed, there are significant grounds to believe that the rogue nuclear state in that region is actually Israel, that it's the one that poses the greatest threat to peace and stability in the area.
Well, certainly Israel has an unacknowledged nuclear stockpile. It's got about, I believe it's about 90 nuclear weapons, which, as you say, have never been acknowledged. The belief, however, with, and I think what Cal said is right, but I think also, Cal, the Pentagon will give its assessment, but I'll be waiting to hear what the International Atomic Energy Agency, the president, Rafael Grossi, says, because they will also, they're on the ground in Iran still, and they may be able to have a quite an objective, reasonable assessment at some point. But yeah, I really, this situation is very, very precarious, because you're right, the Israeli nuclear stash is the unspoken about elephant in the room here. But I think that the world in general does not want Iran to get a nuclear weapon. But again, the lesson, what's the lesson you're going to take from this if you're a rogue state? You look at the agreement that the US, the UK and Russia made with Ukraine back in 2014, the Budapest Agreement, when Ukraine owned about a third of the world's nuclear weapons, and they said, hand them over, and we'll protect you if anything happens. Well, guess what? In 2004, 10 years later, Russia invaded, annexed Crimea, and then went in 2022. And what has the world done to protect Ukraine? Not a whole lot. So I think that, and Libya likewise, the message is that your safest bet when you're dealing with America and Europe indeed is get yourself a nuclear weapon. And so I think that this will probably cause Iran to try and accelerate that process secretly. And so this is not over. This is the first chapter, and it has gone well for Israel. Tactically, it has gone very, very well for Israel. Trump managed to swoop in and get a quick win. That's all he's interested in. Trump doesn't really care what happens 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road when the Houthis are back, when Hamas is reconstituted and Hezbollah and Iran is developing its secret weapons. He won't be dealing with that. He wants the quick win now. He wants the glory now. And if you look at his Truth Social feed, he has 1,000 messages up there all saying, Nobel Prize, Mr. President, well done. You know, and this is what he's relishing at the moment, not the long-term consequences.
Okay, but I wonder how worried he was earlier that the ceasefire, which he had trumpeted as the end to what he's calling the 12-day war, was coming apart when it seemed that Israel was about to have a major retaliatory strike as a result of one Iranian missile, perhaps mistakenly having been fired. Let's hear, and there's a language warning in this, because this is something very rare to hear a senior politician, let alone the president of the United States, dropped the F-bomb in front of cameras and reporters, and think done quite deliberately too, which is why we're not bleeping it out.
Do you believe that Iran is still committed to
the peace? Yeah, I do. They violated it, but Israel violated it too.
Are you questioning if Israel is committed?
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I've never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Do you understand that?
What do you make of that, Carl Thomas?
Well, I wonder what his evangelical Christian supporters, who are all in for him no matter what, are going to think of that kind of language. He's been well known as having a potty mouth, a trash mouth, for a long time, and I think this was deliberate. I think it's unnecessary, and it's not the kind of diplomatic speech or even the kind of speech that a president of the United States ought to be saying publicly. I'm not saying that other Republicans and Democrats don't talk like that behind the scenes, but saying it out front, in front of the whole world, I think diminishes whatever credibility he might have.
But did it also perhaps display a degree of strain and a degree of concern that his big win could be taken away from him, that the Israelis are not necessarily easily controlled?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And he has had this scenario since Saturday night that's been working very well for him. Even a few Democrats have come out in Congress in support of what he did. And other leaders around the world have said basically some good things. But I want to go back to something earlier that was mentioned about the Nobel Peace Prize. This is very funny because you may recall Barack Obama got presented the Nobel Peace Prize right after assuming office, before he had done anything at all. And with respect to the bombing, Clinton and Obama and Biden all bombed other countries without congressional approval. And I don't think any of them got the Nobel Peace Prize.
Fair point. But Mary McCone, I want to come to you just maybe to finish as well. I mean, how much of what has happened in the last 12 days or so has been a distraction? First of all, the Israelis deciding to do this at a time when the international pressure was been ratcheted up because of the atrocities been carried out by the Israeli Defense Forces in Gaza, which many people have described as genocide. And maybe even Trump deciding he needed a win, a distraction away from the poor attendance at his military parade and increasing protests against the activities of his immigration goons.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if you take both of those things, firstly, Trump was humiliated by his parade in Washington. There's no doubt about that. And you only have to look at the pictures of him. And also, he was, I think, probably surprised and somewhat taken aback by the velocity and the numbers that attended the No Kings marches. 5 million people protest around the country. You had the sort of debacle that was the sending the military into the streets in LA. Didn't really work out very well. The public didn't really love that as much as he thought they might. They didn't like that show of strength. And then you had, Trump, as we know, is very, very thin-skinned. So he wanted to distract him from all that. I mean, we're not even talking about Elon Musk anymore. We're not talking about the big, beautiful bill that's getting a bit stickier in Congress than he had anticipated. So he needed to take people's attention away from all of those things and, as well, make himself look like a winner. Trump needs to look like a winner. And I think his language is rightly, as Cal said. And Cal, welcome back. I didn't say 3 weeks was too long for you to be away. But
Marion, I want you to be my date at the Jeff Bezos wedding in Venice.
Well, that's a whole other topic. But are you invited? My goodness. But to get back to Netanyahu, he's looking like this, the world's strongest man at the moment. So Trump wanted a bit of that. And of course, for Netanyahu, he hasn't delivered the hostages. The atrocities that are being committed in Gaza are just appalling. People who are going to try and get food starving. People are being shot by the dozens every day. So he needed to distract from that as well. Both of these strong men needed quick wins to make them look like the strong men that they really crave to have that image broadcast around the world. And so Trump piggybacked very quickly onto Netanyahu's tails following the tactical success of the early strikes. And it is working as a distraction. We're not talking about the other things now. So on that level as well, it is a success. Whether or not, if the ceasefire doesn't hold, however, all bets are off then, because Trump will be, as we heard, furious. He's not going to let Netanyahu take this win from him. And I think that things could get very, very difficult. Okay. All round.
Thank you, Marion McCone and Cal Thomas. Good to have you back.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.